Good day, everyone, and welcome back to the Not Safe for Work Photography Podcast. Today, we're interviewing Christy Connor. Christy is a fetish-friendly freelance model. How's it going, Christy?
It's going great.
That's good. So, how long have you been working as a fetish-friendly model?
Fetish-friendly, probably about 3-ish years.
And you were modeling before that, then?
Yeah, about 2 before that.
So, how did you get involved in modeling?
Whenever I was in high school, my parents put me in a pageant, and each contestant got like headshots and pictures in each category, and the people that were taking the photos were from a talent agency in Nashville, and so they asked me if I would sign with them after the fact, and I was, you know, still underage, obviously, so my parents signed a big contract, and it was such a waste of time and money, to be honest, because they wanted me to do like commercials and stuff, but I had to be 18. So I was like, you know what, maybe it's just not for me. I'll put it on hold till I'm legal. So I turned 18 and then jumped right into it, like as soon as I turned 18, and I've been freelancing and I love it.
I don't want to talk about something I haven't done before, but I know that pageants get a bad reputation. How did you feel about your time in the pageants?
Mine was for like a state pageant, like state Juneteenth, and it was all by the books. I mean, the talent part was not required. There wasn't like a bathing suit competition required because, I mean, we were underage. But we still had to like pay so much money to do like extra contests, like a photo contest, a speech contest, like little miscellaneous things. And each year in each category, it almost seemed like they favorited a certain race. It always was the same type of winner every time. It was always like the picture perfect high school cheerleader. Like they got all the awards, and it wasn't even like equal, I guess. I feel like it was very judged, but I hated it, to be honest.
It sounds like this was somebody's business model. Convince people that they can win and force them to spend a lot of money.
It's so expensive.
All right. So it sounds like modeling, or at least being the center of attention, has kind of always been on your plate. Is this something you've always wanted to do, or is it something that when this talent agency approached you, you were like, oh?
I personally am and always have been very introverted, very shy until you like really get to know me and break my shell. In high school, when I was younger, even like now, I'm just a quiet little bean. But whenever I'm shooting, it's a whole different thing. And I think whenever I shoot, it's because I want to see like how I look through the camera or like through his eyes differently. So I guess it helps me break out of my shell to get.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So when you do break out of your shell, are you trying to be somebody the photographer wants you to be? Or have you created like an alter ego yourself where when you're posing, you're this other person?
I think like my personality and the way that I like myself and all that, I think it's honestly the same whether you know me as like personally or professionally. I'm not the kind of person that like as soon as I'm shooting, it's like a whole different persona. I don't know, just kind of, it's either I'm shy or I'm extra.
I can understand that. I tend to be shy myself until I have a job to do.
Yeah.
I found that, like, for example, I can be a bartender. I can be a pretty decent bartender. Not an introverted job.
Yeah.
All right. Where do you get most of your work? Do you get most of it locally, local photography groups, social media, Model Mayhem?
Whenever I started, I worked with the very first photographer I ever worked with. He's out of Washington. My boyfriend at the time and I, we drove up there, and I was one, quote unquote, like aspiring models. We were kind of in a contract, and it was like, you sign with me and I'll like publish you. I'll get your name out there. I'll get you some work, get you started, blah, blah, blah. So whenever I started with him, he introduced me to Model Mayhem, and I was a little fresh baby at the time, so I didn't know anything about it, and I still use it today. So I get most of my work from there, but I also have like my links on my Model Mayhem, so a lot of times they'll reach out to me on those other sites, or I'll put up like a casting if I'm going somewhere, and then we just kind of find each other. It's not really a certain platform besides Model Mayhem.
I need to start branching out myself. I've been using Model Mayhem.
Yeah.
I hear everybody's moved on to Instagram, but I'm so late.
I use Instagram too, but I've had two of my accounts deleted, so I don't have nearly as many people on there as I did before, so it's hard to get.
Was it from, I assume, nudity violations, given
what your work is? I mean, I censored everything, but apparently, yeah, nudity.
So how did you make the transition? You said you started doing the modeling 2 years ago, but you only started doing fetish modeling 3 or so years. What happened to make that transition occur?
I think mainly it was the relationship that I got in that I'm still in and very grateful for. He is actually a photographer. It's how we met. He reached out to me on Model Mayhem. Uh-oh. And he's a photographer.
We're gonna have to cut this out because all the photographers are gonna be like, I can date the models.
No, oh boy. No, oh boy.
just kidding. I'm sorry, continue. Okay.
So the guy that I'm with, he's a fetish photographer. And he reached out to me and introduced, like, or he proposed, I guess, what he wanted to shoot, because I'm, again, a pretty open book. So he proposed a lot of things that were obviously new to me, and he had a lot of, like, great pictures, and I checked his references. They were all clean, and he was kind of local, so I was like, all right, well, we can just dip our toe in it and go with, like, safe words and everything. So we shot, and it was great, and he just kind of kept slowly, like, introducing different things, and I just felt like I was at home doing it. I don't know. It was really hard to explain, but I just felt, like, so comfortable in the setting. And kind of like, where has this been the last, like, 2 years of my life? So it's kind of become my main thing.
So were you experienced in the scene before this, or was this kind of your first introduction to the scene?
To the scene, not really, but to the shooting side of it and being professional about it, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I have some more questions kind of around that in a few minutes. But first, let's talk a little bit about rates and payment, because everybody that works in photography wants to get paid.
I get that.
Yeah. There's an age-old debate in modeling about single rate versus multiple rate. Frequently tends to be around what type of content you'll shoot. You'll see many models who will have things like, this rate for glamour modeling, this rate for nude modeling, this rate for more explicit modeling or something like that. Whereas others will say, you know, it's my time. My time is worth this no matter what type of content I'm shooting. Where do you fall on that?
Normally it fluctuates, and I hate to say that, but normally I have a rate for up to nude, which means no open legs, no erotic, no fetish, just like fashion and nude and implied. Mm-hmm. There's a rate for that. And then there's a higher rate for fetish and erotic. I put those in the same context, but genitalia is going to be out regardless.
Yeah.
And then I have, like, if I'm traveling, it depends on where I'm going, how far away I add on to that. Or if someone wants to book me for, like, a half day or full day, I have those rates as well. So it really just depends, really, if you want me, like, hourly or for a project, or it really just varies. But there's rates for each thing.
So what made you decide to use that model instead of the one rate for everything?
Going back to the first photographer that I worked with, he was really, like, my mentor on everything. He taught me how to, like, I guess, price yourself and know your worth. But obviously in the beginning, it had to be lower because you weren't as experienced and stuff. So I guess growing up, it kind of grew a little bit, but not by much. I think also comparing it with other models that I'm friends with, they're pretty similar. And I got, like, their feedback on if it was too much or too less. So really just kind of word of mouth and your own worth.
That's actually an interesting thing that I hadn't thought of. How often do models talk about their rates?
Oh my God, so often. We spill all the tea. We talk about it all the time. But I mean, I guess between photographers, they also, I mean, it goes both ways. You know, like, photographers on certain projects or whatever, however they work, they're like, well, I bought my equipment. I'm doing the editing, the time. You know, I need to be paid too. So, like, I understand it from both sides.
So when you're producing content for actual sale, do you charge a different rate for that?
Most of the time, if we're both going to be selling it or publishing it, producing it for other use, and it's going to other people, normally whenever we shoot, it's for trade, because we both get copyright to the content, rather than just, hey, I just want to shoot you, like, in a field to add it to my portfolio and get more experience on your belt. It's way different than, hey, I have a paid person that will pay for this content for X amount so we can just trade and both split the profit.
That makes total sense because, yeah, if the traditional licensure, the photographer owns the content, not the model.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, yeah, if you're monetizing the content in other ways, if you use a different contract, and trade for time makes sense there.
Yeah.
Since you're both getting paid different.
Correct.
You mentioned when someone has a specific desire for content, do you get a lot of sort of custom commissioned shoots like that where someone is looking for a very specific piece of content with a very specific model and they hire the photographer to do it?
Whenever it comes to custom work, a lot of the time it'll either be on my own site and someone will request it, or it'll come from a photographer that has like a private collector and they'll propose shooting it with me. It's very rare that a person who wants to buy will be like, hey, I want this model with this photographer. They're really just concerned about the content getting done, not really how it's made.
That's a part of photography I don't have any experience with. So that is super interesting.
It's the best thing I've ever done. It's my favorite thing to do.
You know, the very next question is going to be, what is your favorite shot from your portfolio? But maybe we should dive into your favorite type of work then. Why are the customs your favorite specific type of work?
Customs are 90-ish% of the time from someone's kink or someone's fetish or, you know, something that they're curious about. And whether it's like a lot of the time they come to me and they're like, hey, like you're a redhead and you resemble blah, blah, blah. Like, I would love to see you do this. And it would be like, whether it's a fantasy of me doing it or a like celebrity that kind of resembles me doing it. It's just really like interesting to me because each person has, you know, different likes and dislikes and fetishes. And for me to like, I guess, record or make a photo set of that custom, it also helps me explore it, whether it's like my thing or not. I just really like trying a lot of new things. And I also like connecting with them and making them happy. And I've always been like a peer. So it just makes me really, really happy to like do something that's not for everybody. And it's just like for a certain group of people or a certain person based off of what they like.
Well, let's go to that, the original question. What was your favorite shot from your portfolio?
It's actually not a fetish shot. It was from, I want to say it's on, but I shot with this guy in Portland, Oregon. We've had an established relationship for like 5 years now. He was like one of my biggest mentors. The first time I went out there, Portland is cold, very cold. It was like August and we went to a little like nude beach and he brought a fishnet. I had like long red curly hair. It was natural. It was great. I was just like doing some water beach photos and he threw the net on my back and I was crawling and it fit so nice and my hair was wet and it just looked like a little mermaid crawling in the water. It's like my favorite shot. It's like 5 years ago, but it's still my favorite.
It is definitely an interesting shot.
I love it.
And yeah, you wouldn't think that the net would work, but it totally does. The way it falls along your waist just perfectly. Yeah.
Yes. And the curves.
All right. Well, we wanted to specifically talk about fetish photography, and we've already kind of dived into it a little bit, but let's go into a little more detail. So when you're shooting nude or fetish work, would you recommend to a new model that they shoot under their real name or a pseudonym?
For that, I would honestly just recommend what they've already been doing. If it's new to them, I would honestly recommend a pseudonym.
Fake name.
Fake name.
Yeah. I'm using one here. Like I said, I'm publishing this podcast under a fake name because I don't want people to search me up for work and connect right. It. So the very first line of your Model Mayhem profile states that you're looking to do more fetish, bondage, and shibari work.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this a little bit, but a lot of nude models may check the box for fetish in their profile, mm-hmm. but their portfolio usually makes it seem like it's not something they either really do or they keep it all hidden. You're going in the opposite direction. Why? you want everybody to know.
Well, whenever I first started out and I wanted to get more work and I was not educated or aware of what bondage, fetish, all that really meant, I myself too am guilty of clicking all the boxes that like, hey, it pays, so let me just do it. And that is yeah. the wrong thing to do. Do not do that. I've learned the hard way with that. I am more open about it, I guess, just because I myself am open to trying new things, and I've learned that it's kind of my niche. It's what I love to do, but it's also not for everybody. So, I mean, you have to be careful about who you do it with, too. So, like, I'll introduce it out there that I'm open to doing it, and there's other sites that you could find that work on. So, it really just depends. I just wish people would be, like, careful about it rather than just like, hey, I'm open to it, and then get, you know, an offer because people see you throwing it out there and then being so naive and getting taken advantage of. So,
all right, I have two follow-up questions. So the first one is, from the sounds of it, it sounds like you got some unpleasant messages or some shocking things when you had on there first. Did you get a response you were not expecting from having fetish checked on your profile initially?
Yeah. I mean, the word fetish is a big umbrella. And whenever I first put it out there, I mean, it happens way less now, but it still happens. But whenever I first put it out there, people actually read the bio sometimes, and they would message.
Sometimes.
Yeah. And they would message me, and it would be pretty much just a porn offer. And that's not what Model Mayhem is for at all. So I just have to, like, keep reminding people that, like, hey, I just want you to be upfront, and, like, if that's what you're trying to do, like, let me know. But, I mean, fetish means fetish instead of, like, adult interaction. It's
yeah. Fetish. It's definitely a grading scale, and there was a guy I remember when I lived down in Culpeper who his entire portfolio was girls tied up, mm-hmm. but not like Shibari, more like, you know, damsel in distress. And I was like, you are not in this for the art, sir. And yeah. You shouldn't judge him. I'm not judging him.
Right.
But like you said, Model Mayhem, at least ostensibly, is for art initially.
Correct. That's why I don't post hardly any of what I work on there.
So you mentioned other sites. Are there better sites for if you wanted to do those other types of photography or other types of video work that work better than Model Mayhem?
For scouting?
I mean, well, if we're coming at this from an educational perspective, you know, photographers or models that are hearing this that want to do more of that type of work, where should they look? Like you said, Model Mayhem is not really designed for that. Is there a better place for them to go and find the models or find the photographers to support them?
I fully support FetLife, but also on FetLife, like, I feel like it's a hit or miss, honestly, because there's, you know, selfies and, like, personal pictures that people post, and then there's also a side of it that's like, hey, I'm a photographer, here's my erotic photography, looking for models, and you can also get people there too, but you have to be super careful. But I feel like that's more of an adult site to search with mm-hmm. than Model Mayhem.
Yeah, and I think if I recall, they're trying to be more of a Facebook than a model specific site, but I don't think there is a site that's like Model Mayhem, but for more adult photography.
Maybe we all should right. make it happen.
It sounds like a business model. Actually, you know what? That's probably not a terrible idea. If you could provide kind of the legal structure behind it that lets you know, like, oh, you know, what you want to do is legal in this state, but not in this state, and maybe help you maintain the identity records and all the kind of the legal background stuff you have to do. Mm-hmm. There's so many people doing amateur work right now, and none of them are following the law. Like, they're just doing it.
That's why it's terrifying for me. I mean, I've only been in this for like 5 years, but I'm mm-hmm. still like always so scared for new people because, I mean, I was there too. Like, you're so naive. You'll fall for and you'll book anything no matter.
Someone wants to pay me. Yay.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if anybody listens to this and they're, you know, looking for a new business idea, you can have it yep. for free. Just make sure to invite us.
Yep. Just at me when All you right. do it.
Do you have a specific favorite fetish that you prefer shooting?
DDLG.
I didn't see any of that on your portfolio, but like you mentioned, right. a lot of your stuff doesn't go on your Model Mayhem.
Yeah. It's a part of me that I feel like isn't as exposed because it's something that you have to be really careful about. It's definitely not for everybody. So yeah, I'm very eerie about who I shoot it with. So, but it's definitely a big part.
Are there any specific fetishes you refuse to shoot? There's some we probably don't have to name.
Yeah,
there's some really, really unpleasant ones that.
Yeah. I mean, more degrading stuff that I won't shoot is like scat play, dipping my toe in water sports, so it's not a hard limit, but it's not also one that's not. I'll do a lot of like degradation, humiliation, pretty much as low as it goes besides that. So I'm pretty open, but.
So that actually leads into the next question. I had specifically thought about rigging, but frankly, all of those are risky play. Yeah. And especially with somebody you've never worked with before, do you have specific strategies and or screening methods to make sure that you're shooting with somebody that's actually serious about what they're doing and they're not just kind of going on a lark or your things aren't going to go downhill real fast?
I'm honestly not that picky. I just don't shoot hardly anyone outside of my own circle for that. Before I was with my current rigger, I said okay to a couple amateur people who were like, yeah, I'm trying it, or I do it at home, so I just need a new model. So like I let them do it and it was horrible. So I wish I would have screened them better, but I honestly gave them the benefit of the doubt way more than I should have. It didn't end bad, but it was not a pleasant experience. But I mean, I feel with anybody, you should build a relationship and trust before you do that with somebody, because I mean, it can be very dangerous. They need to know like what signs to look out for and safe words and little things that not everybody is going to be about.
That makes sense. Do you have any concrete examples of things? For example, meeting them beforehand in a public place, maybe shooting a non, although frankly, if they tell you they want to shoot this really hardcore thing, I guess shooting with them at all is a risk. Like you can't, yeah, you can't just be like, well, I'll shoot a non-nude shoot first, because you're still placing yourself with them.
Right.
Do you do escorts when you're shooting with a new person or doing something more risky?
I've honestly never had an escort for a shoot because I'm so shy about shooting with someone, no matter how comfortable I am with the shooter, the photographer. But I mean, I'm all about people having an escort. I personally wish I could do it. I'm just too shy and I will not be able to be myself and shoot at all if I know someone is present, whether they're watching or not.
My wife has that specific problem. She's modeled for me a couple times, but yeah. She does not want them ever to be shown. She doesn't want anybody to ever see it. She doesn't want anybody to ever be there. Aww. But as long as nobody ever sees it, she's totally fine with it.
That's so
sweet. I'd like to think so. All right. And this is kind of in the same vein. Although I mean, we kind of went over this, but all right, let's try it from a different direction. Okay. How can a new photographer? So let's assume that this is a new photographer, and they want to get into fetish modeling. How do they show they are trustworthy?
I want to say to shoot with them beforehand, or even like go out on a coffee date or something to establish a current relationship, and it not be the first shoot that you're doing. But the other part of me says, like, their attitude may change when it turns to, like, a fetish or a bondage shoot, no matter how comfy you are with them. Like, it may just be, like, a whole persona change. So it's really hard to suggest how to handle it. Me, personally, I keep my circle for bondage and fetish very small. If someone proposes it to me, then I at least will go out with them first. Like the step beyond video chat, because they may meet you in person and your personalities clash, or the opposite.
Get that creepy yeah. feeling.
I feel like you get vibes more in person than you do over FaceTime.
True.
So it sounds like that first.
And it sounds like I think I like the idea of, especially, you don't jump right into, I want to tie you up. You start off with, let's do a glamour shoot. And maybe that's not what you really want to do, but again, the idea is building rapport.
Yeah.
And building.
It's very important.
All right. What kind of boundaries do you establish before the shoot? Do you typically, whenever you're doing a fetish shoot, whether that's a riskier one like rigging, or less risky, like maybe it's a more of a domination or leather or something like that. How do you discuss those boundaries?
Since the beginning, I have always been very, very, very strict about safe words. Anytime you're under someone else's control, whether it's just like a fashion shoot in public or fetish or bondage, I personally have always used a stoplight system. So not really saying green if you're good, because I mean that should be obvious, but if you're kind of testing your boundaries, maybe a yellow, and then if you need all hands off and stopping, a red. I also feel like you should talk about, kind of like consult before and after, like what you're comfortable with, what your boundaries are, and then, you know, just kind of take it a step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've always been one to like speak my mind in a shoot, whether it's like, hey, we're going to go from like fashion to lingerie and lingerie to implied, implied to nude. I'm going to step behind this tree and change. Even though you're about to see me nude, I'm not comfortable changing in front of you yet. Little things like that, I feel like a lot of people should communicate way better.
Yeah. No, I've definitely found that it's nice to have a place for people to change. There's something about that, like that mental, making that mental change from, yes, you know, I'm a normal human and I'm supposed to wear clothes everywhere, to I'm now, you know, a model and I have a very specific role to play.
Yeah, you become very vulnerable in the nude. Mm-hmm.
All right. Have you ever, and you do not have to answer this question, you can tell me to fuck off. Have any photographers crossed any pre-agreed upon boundaries? And more importantly, how did you respond? And do you have good strategies for models when this, because frankly, it'll probably inevitably happen with some photographers.
I have had a couple instant boundaries were crossed, and those boundaries were discussed before. I let every person that I'm shooting with know that, like, I keep protection on me, and that if it needs to happen, like, it's gonna happen. Like, I'm gonna let you know that I'm gonna protect myself. I'm not gonna like flash you with it, you know. But also, I also let my close circle of friends, like two or three people, know my location while I'm shooting. In a way, I'll give them the address that I'll be at, and the photographer knows that I'm sharing it, and we have like a system where if I feel something's off and I can't like leave to call somebody, that I'll just make a quick text and they'll call and send my location. And that has happened before once, and it was not a good situation at all. But I do suggest that people at least have one person, whether it's an escort with them or not. If they don't have one, at least let somebody know where you are, your general area. Because, I mean, you may like lose service and not be able to call, or just like little rules I feel like everyone should have.
Certainly. You also called out in your profile that you love working with new people. What advice, just general advice, we've talked a little bit about more specific items, what general advice would you give to a photographer who wants to shoot nude or fetish for the first time? They are struggling to overcome their shyness when they message a model.
I think a photographer who's reaching first time and either they're nervous about it or they feel like the model's gonna reject them. If you don't have many photos in your port that you're reaching out on, at least provide a link or say, hey, like, I'll email you my recent photos. Something that's more trustworthy so the model knows what they're working with and it's not some sketch. And also, like, maybe offer just like even a video or an audio phone call to like prove you're kind of legit says a whole lot more than, hey, here's five photos that I've taken in the last 3 years. Can you please work with me? Like, no one's
and they're all from a cell phone.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some good cell phone photography. It's never in the portfolio.
You can always tell.
You can always tell. What type of mental preparation do you do for a demanding shoot? If it's something coming up and you know it's going to be a tough one, do you, what kind of a mental or physical preparation?
It varies between if I've worked with that person. I mean, with anything that I'm doing, honestly, alone, it takes me a lot to get mentally prepared. And if I'm not mentally prepared for what I'm about to do, it's either not going to happen or it's going to be really, really bad. So if it's someone that I'm used to and have shot with before, normally just having communication up until then and knowing exactly what we're going to be shooting and doing helps a whole lot. If it's someone new, honestly, the same thing. Like, if you can't keep communication before a shoot, then are you that serious about it? Not just like planning it for like 2 months out. Here's the address, here's the time, here's the day. And then the day before, like checking in, that's not okay. So I guess communication would be the big.
How about aftercare?
Me personally, I, on every shoot, no matter what type it is, I have learned to bring chocolate with me.
Nice.
Chocolate and water.
So it helps. Yeah. It helps against the dark arts too.
You're right. The chocolate helps, you know, release the endorphins, and it helps you come down from a peak of anything. Honestly, it helps you relax. And then obviously water, because you need to hydrate. But the main part with aftercare, besides the physical, is just like communicating and talking about like the goods and the bads of the shoot, or what could have changed a little bit. I think it's a big part, so the photographer knows not only if you shoot with him again what could be different, but what they can check in with other models, whether they're new to them or not.
It's interesting. I've definitely seen some models before who kind of want to see the results, and other models who are, you know, we're done, thanks, see you later.
Oh gosh. I always want to know what it looks like, but.
All right. What would you recommend for a new model? We talked about a photographer before. I frankly should have stuck these two questions together, and I totally didn't. What would you recommend for a new model who's thinking about fetish and BDSM work, but you know she's not doing it in her private life or his private life, and they're not familiar with the scene? How would be the best way to get into it?
I would say education.
All right. Places like FetLife, forums, books.
Probably.
Mentor?
Yeah, maybe a mentor if you're really trustful of them. FetLife is more, I mean, it's mainly pictures, but it has like forums, discussions and all that. And some people may be more comfortable reaching out to strangers on a non-website like FetLife and saying, hey, like, I want to get into this, but I'm not sure how. Like, I mean, it's a really great place to connect. But I personally, I just looked up every single fetish that I could find and read on it and watched it and asked people that I knew and knew I could trust with that about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually did it. So, I mean, I feel like you can't really know about it until you experience it, whether it's just watching it or doing it.
Yeah. Have you been to any munches?
I've always wanted to, but I've never. Gotcha. I have some local, but mm-hmm. I've been invited many a time. But I am so introverted in that sense that I cannot go by myself. And there's never a person that can go on the thing. So I watch from afar.
Yeah, I've been to one in this area. It was interesting. The people were all very friendly. Vibe was very much meat market. So which, and I'm married, you know, I'm not in an open relationship. So it was not my scene. Because it very much seemed like people, it was very much more around open relationships. That sort of thing.
I've heard that it's more about like, not really swingers, but people who are super poly and want to try like,
well, trying to meet people. And I can see where certain parts and certain fetishes too don't necessarily require monogamy, because it's not, it's, yeah. Anyways, you know, this is not a fetish podcast. It's this fetish photography podcast. So, okay. But I'm sure that there's someone someday that's going to listen to this and is going to be yelling at their speaker saying, that's not how that works at all.
For sure.
Always. All right. So let's talk about platforms. Let's talk about fan. Right now, are you attempting to work more with fans directly, or are you trying to work more with photographers, which I guess is your primary, I guess you could, one way you could be primary source of income, or the other way you could think about it is where you're spending, trying to, are you trying to make fans happy, or are you trying to make photographers happy?
Honestly, I go more for the fan.
Right, so working directly, do what websites are you currently using to work directly with fans?
Mainly OnlyFans. And since I'm building back my Instagram, but mm-hmm. also Instagram as the people come back to me that I had before.
Yeah, you mentioned you'd lost a couple accounts.
Yeah, I had like 13K on one and then 26K there. It was a really sad day.
Ouch. Yeah. I think I've got about 20 on my Instagram account because I don't post. That's terribly interesting. I've learned that to be popular on Instagram, you have to post pretty, and I'm not doing nearly enough of that.
What? That's the lie.
I saw that you had a Patreon for at least a period of time. Did that work out?
Patreon was the first paid platform that mm-hmm. I got into. I think I was like, when I first got it, I was not very informed on it, and their policies were pretty great. I was subbed to a few people on there that were photographers or in the DDLG that would post their stuff, and it would be almost like a Tumblr for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to just like upload my portfolio, like photos I've taken, not even like selfies, just like professional photos that I've had taken, whether it was like fashion, nude, fetish. And then it was great. And then out of nowhere, I got an email that I was going against their policies for posting sexual graphic photos, which I mean, some of them were, but I didn't know it was in the wrong. And so, like, I deleted those photos that they talked about. And then I went back in one day and it was like my whole account was gone. I just kind of let it go.
That's interesting. I found it. I just did a Google search for your name and it popped up there, but
maybe I'm unaware of it then.
Well, they may have restored parts of it then, parts that were not violated, but I think it looked like you still had. Now I'm going to have to go find the site.
Me too, honestly.
This makes riveting radio. So this is going to get cut out. So yeah, if you do a search for your name, it comes up with the appeal photography, which is the one you talked
about. Yeah.
And the second one, ViewBug with Shibari Ropework, Media. There's Instagram, but that's not you. It's someone else. I could have sworn I saw a Patreon. There we go. Patreon.com/join/Christy Connor. You must be older. It does not say how many. So I was mistaken about that. It just says that you're here.
Okay. I'll have to get back to that.
Yeah, for the $25 tier, you'll tell me I'm perfect. I am all about being told that I am perfect. For $25 a month, I can be justified.
I got it.
All right. All right. So since you were talking about, you've got Model Mayhem, you've got Custom Work, you've got Instagram, and you have OnlyFans. Do you produce different content for each of the various platforms, or are they all kind of the same thing and you're all pushing everything everywhere?
Honestly, it's pretty scattered.
No. This is your chance to come across as super put together.
I'm not at all. My ADD and ADHD. So on my Twitter, I don't post much on there. I really just promote my other pages. I mean, it's the only platform that's honestly stayed with me, so that's great.
Now you got to have somewhere that people can come find you, somewhere solid there that they know they're always.
You're right. So I really don't post much there. If I do, it's not explicit. It may be nude, but it's not explicit. I'll tease a little bit on there, but not really. And then on my OnlyFans, I post every single thing, like all of my shoots, all of my selfies, all my interactions, custom. That's my main gig. And I love it because, I mean, they allow sex work, so it's great. And then Instagram, I'm very, very careful. I'm very eerie to honestly post anything. But, yeah, it's mainly old.
All right, you mentioned sex work specifically. This was something that came up, again, in one of the previous, with one of the, I guess I can say her name because we had a conversation about it, and she asked, but in a discussion with Melancholic, where she talked about how fetish work and erotic work kind of rides the line on, and I guess depending on how you look at it, probably. What are your feelings on that?
Erotic can be, like, erotic fetish work can be solo. It can be a fantasy that's solo, whereas sex work is more, personally to me, sex work is more interaction with somebody and selling that content or getting paid to do said content. Or act. So it is a fine line, honestly. But I look at it as, like, are you photographing it for purposes or not? Or are you doing it out of fun? So, or are you getting paid either?
Right.
Yeah, it is a fine line, but sex work.
I'm not going to disagree with you there. I am fully, I mean, people pay for your time for everything.
Yes.
I don't understand why people think that sex work would be more degrading than working for minimum wage at a job where they make you scrub floors and pick up trash and get down on your hands and knees to, you know, dig out from behind the reach in. And it's, you're selling your mind, you're selling your body, but we're not here for moralizing either. All right. Yeah. I think actually that may end up being a show at one point on here for sure. Cause like you said, Even models that just do art nudes, you're still kind of, there's a lot of guys out there that are hiring you for their, their own fantasy. Maybe the fantasy is that they're a cool photographer who is taking pictures of beautiful naked women. But all right, we talked before the podcast a little bit about the 1,000 true fans question. And for the listener, the 1,000 true fans hypothesis came out a decade or so ago. It was talking about how internet creators can make money and how you don't need to please everybody. Somewhere in the world, if you can find 1,000 people that are willing to spend $100 on you a year. Or if you can find, if you're, you know, a little bit broader, you can find 10,000 people that are willing to spend $10 on you, then you can make a living. You can make an excellent middle-class living. Mm-hmm. I ran some of those numbers for photography. And for example, if you charge, I didn't use $100,000. I used $80,000 because that's the median middle-class income. And if you're a model and you're attempting to make a living and you're trying to be a full-time model, if you are doing, this is really kind of the difference between OnlyFans and those types of platforms versus shooting as purely a photographic model working with the photographer. If you shoot if you charge $100 an hour, which sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, most people balk at just handing over $200, it still would take you 400 shoots a year to reach middle class.
That's crazy.
That's a lot of shoots. That is more than one a day.
You're right.
And you can't do it. You can't do like four or five shoots in a day, because by the time you get to that third, fourth, and fifth photographer, they hire a model for a certain look and they want you to come in, you know, bright and fresh face.
You're pretty broken.
Yeah. You're going to come in. You'll be great for the, if they're like, I want to do a broken down, you know, depressive shoot where, you know, the model's on drugs. Okay. That, you're like, all right, I'll schedule that one for last.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if you charge $200 an hour, that's still 200 shoots a year. There's not that many photographers in most towns. How often do you get booked for like actual shoots, would you say? Like not any of your subscription work, not kind of any, but like photographers booking you for their shoots.
On average, I would say once every 3 weeks.
Yeah. So that's definitely not. And I know some of the traveling, that's why a lot of the full-time models travel, is because that's the only way to hit that number. They've got to hit, you know, multiple cities. They've got to schedule 3-4 shoots a day.
Yeah.
So now let's contrast that with OnlyFans. OnlyFans, $10 a month. You only need 700 fans.
Yep.
Which,
it's hard to get that much.
Yeah, it is. And you've got to somehow convince them that, you know, they should. Because, you know, people are so weird about this. People will happily spend, you know, $10 on a CD or I guess MP3 now. You know, they'll buy a book, but people do not want to pay for their erotic.
Yeah, and that is one of my biggest pets.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Honestly. I mean, that's why I think a lot of people on OnlyFans, they're very strict about, like the creators, they're very strict about trying to get most of their paid following to keep their rebill on or autopay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can turn it off at any time, but that's the model's main steady income, is the people who stay. And I get it also from the viewer's standpoint of like, well, is it worth paying even like $10 a month? Like, how often are you posting content versus how many paid stuff you're wanting me to do inside the subscription? Like, I get it from both sides, but that's our income, you know?
I just want to throw some other numbers real quick. If you can get them to pay $25 a month, it's only 300 fans. And if you can get them to pay $100 a month, it's less than 100. So if you can find 100 people that just fall in love with you, and I mean, I'll take the 100 too. They can fall in love with me. So what kind of work does it take to get somebody to keep subscribing? Because it seems like if you just look at the numbers, it seems like it would be easier via OnlyFans. But like you said, people subscribe for a month. What kind of strategy you employ? What things do you do to bring them back every month?
Well, it's also really, really hard because OnlyFans takes 20% of every single purchase.
Ooh, I didn't include that. I'll have to include that in my calculation.
Not taxed at all. So you still have to pay taxes on top of that.
Yeah, the tax thing I figured, because again, like most people would say 100,000 pre-tax or 80,000 pre-tax is still pretty cool.
Well, yeah, you're right. The 20% hit hard.
Wow, that's more than I thought.
Until OnlyFans got bought out over the summer. And then it hopped up 15%.
It was 5% beforehand?
It was 5%. Everyone see, that's a bank.
I'll be honest. That's something I have never understood. The same with like Uber and Lyft. They charge so much and all they had to do is write the app, connect them.
Yes.
I mean, that's all about OnlyFans. And I get that. There's hosting costs. There's other. Yeah.
But to get those people to stay, I've been bouncing back and forth about changing my sub price because I post so much. Mm-hmm. And I post between 1 and 3 times daily. Which I feel like is a lot because I'm subscribed to like 20 people and some of them, they don't post for like a week and it's a paid message or it's just not even worth it, honestly. But for me personally, to keep those people, I send out a message, whether it's like a photo set or a video, to, you can choose specifically the people who have their reveal on. So I choose it to them as like a thank you for like staying with me every like Friday or something. Like once mm-hmm. or twice a week, I'll send just them a message that says, hey, like here's some unseen content that I won't post on my page because you're staying with me, rather than it being paid, like a paid thing to mm-hmm. open. And that's right. really boosted it a whole lot. And plus I post so much and I do a lot of customs. So
gotcha. Yeah. And you mentioned that's a big, I think you said 90% of what you do is customs. Wow.
I'm just so open to doing like almost anything. So right. I personally love it and it makes them stay because they can get almost like anything they want. So it's a real good connection. Honestly, I think it's that combined with communicating with them and messaging them back almost immediately. Like I'm really keen on messaging my people back, whether it's just communicating about their day, small talk, or business with them. I don't just do the work and not talk to the people that are paying for it.
90% of your work is your custom. Those are your 100 true fans. However many of them there are, they're the ones that are coming after you and asking specifically custom work that involves you. So really building that relationship. Well, it looks like we are about out of time. We do have time for one last question. What is the most important thing that you think new models should know or do? The number one thing, if somebody came up to you and said, I am thinking about getting into modeling.
Oh gosh. There's so many.
Yeah, you got to pick one. I make people do this when I interview people for work too. I give them an obviously poor choice and I tell them you can only pick one and they go crazy. They're like, no, but we can do both. And I'm like, nope,
exactly.
Got to pick one.
Can't have your cake and eat it. The number one thing I would say, because I mean, everyone's going to be naive in the beginning until you learn yourself. I would just say protect yourself.
Yeah, that you're the most important person, right? You're the most important person to you.
Right. I mean, whether it's like telling somebody your location so they know where you're at, or having some experience or having something that you could, it's very important. I've just learned the hard way. Don't do it.
And now we're going to end on a downer. I'm sorry to hear that. All right. So Christy, this was an excellent interview and thank you so much for speaking with us today. Where can anyone find you online if they wanted to connect with you after this is released?
On OnlyFans, you can find at Christy Connor, Real Christy Connor on Instagram, ChristyConnor97 on Twitter, or if you're feeling really frisky, you can find me at KConnor97 on FetLife.
My FetLife account is so empty. I created it and it just sits there. And with that, we're out. I hope that everyone has a lovely week.